Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you may be in the 24 time zones of our great globe, our ever-shrinking globe. Actually, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM for the beginning of the week. I'd like to welcome yet another new affiliate. It's kind of a split city in Atlanta, Georgia. North Atlanta is served by WMXV. And then we have other stations that cover another part of Atlanta. But surely North Atlanta belongs to WMXV 96.7. WXVV, which I'm welcoming. Hello there. WXVV covers the southern part of Atlanta. There we go. And North Atlanta is served by WMXV. So, to WXVV-FM, 96.7 on the dial, covering the southern Atlanta area with six beautiful kilowatts. Welcome to the ever-growing network. Growing and growing and growing. Glad to have so many of you. All right, the Bush administration contends that Osama bin Laden calculated in advance how many casualties the enemy would suffer in the September 11th attacks in this famous now videotape. I suppose you've been hearing about it all over the place, right? The videotape found in Afghanistan. Two senior officials said privately that Bush wants to let the world see the tape seized in Afghanistan. They say he was holding off on a final decision while... Here's what they say. Intelligence officials authenticate their Arab translation with experts and recheck anything that might betray intelligence gathering methods. The tape could be released pretty soon. Maybe. Now, a number of things have already leaked about the tape. You know, that this constitutes a complete admission that he did it and was anticipating all sorts of things about the attack he was planning, surfaced in a private home in Afghanistan. And I heard on the radio earlier today that Osama bin Laden is seen on this tape, we'll see if it's true, joking that some of the hijackers didn't know they were on a suicide mission. That's what I heard. We'll see. The whole thing is pretty wild, and I guess there's very little doubt now that Osama bin Laden's our guy. They don't have him yet. As a matter of fact, they're saying that even though we have eroded, and this is what I told you to bear this in mind, even though we have eroded the Taliban, certainly, not so much Al-Qaeda. In fact, even though we have a couple of lieutenant types, fact of the matter is, most of Osama's top guys remain free along with him, and we're saying it could be several months before we get him. So Al-Qaeda, of course, is worldwide, and whether they had shifted their resources out of Afghanistan, you've got to think about this now. They may have shifted resources and support for command out of Afghanistan some time ago wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they knew the war was coming, right? They're worldwide, so we still have to be very careful because certainly there is the expectation that something else is going to happen. Israeli attack helicopters struck a Palestinian police post in northern Gaza early Tuesday. Witnesses and Palestinian security officials say one person was slightly injured, so it was not as bad as some of them have been. And Israel's just not going to take it anymore. Russia and the U.S. are said to be closer on the number of missiles to cut back. So we may be near a deal with Russia to cut back further on the number of missiles, warheads, that kind of thing. Generally, I think it's a pretty good idea. We only need, I mean, how many warheads do we actually need in order to ensure that everybody virtually is dead? But you've got to wonder a little bit. If mad, that would be mutual assured destruction. That was a very strong theory during the Cold War, which was quite accurate. And that is that if the war were to begin, there would be mutual virtual extinction. Now, if that psychology kept us from war for all of those years, and then as we cut back the number of missiles and warheads to the point where nuclear war would not be complete extinction for everybody, ask yourself, folks, do we make complete nuclear war more or less likely? Actually, more likely. If the only real thing that prevented war before was, suicide, then once it becomes not suicidal and one side or the other could win, in essence, seems to me war is all the more likely, not less likely. Of course, I don't exactly know where that line is, and they don't tell us. Here's another official story. This is interesting, on what's going on in Cuba, where many of us believe they have discovered Atlantis. The discovery of what may be an ancient underwater city off Cuba's western coast is causing heated controversy now that the world seems to finally know about it only a half year after we told you. But in the world of marine archaeologists, of course, they are freaking out, I told you. It was reported yesterday that a team of Canadian and Cuban researchers had taken sonar scans and videotaped footage of mammoth stones submerged in 600 to 700 meters, 2,200 feet of water. They seem to be arrayed in architecturally designed formations. Now, here we go. Paul Weinsberg, a member of the Havana-based Advanced Digital Communications, which is conducting the site exploration, said that some of the structures resemble Mayan temples. This is going to... He goes on, and then we'll get to the rest of it. The megalithic stones, he said, may date from as early as 4000 BC. His wife, project director Paulina Zalitsky, who we've heard interviewed here by Linda, said the structure looks like it could have been a large urban center. But here it comes, inevitably. Martin Dean, director of the University of Britain's St. Andrews Marine Archaeological Unit, British fellow, said yesterday, the world's seas and oceans are full of underwater limestone formations. Some of them cover as many square miles, which are mistakenly interpreted as sunken cities with monotonous regularity. You can imagine how he said it. Rather monotonous regularity. I'm sure he said it that way. Another critic, Alistair Crame, C-R-A-M-E, head of the Geological Sciences Division of the British Antarctic Survey in Cambridge, claimed why the site is too deep to have any structures fashioned by humans. He goes on, it's very unlikely the seabed would drop 650 meters in 6,000 years. The 650-meter depth, he adds, is 550 below the lowest global sea level it experienced over the past million years. Duh. However, Ms. Zalitsky, a Soviet-trained offshore engineer, rebuffed the criticism, saying, quote, I'm here in Cuba, and what we've found is here. It's local. Not in the United Kingdom, and it's not a matter of opinion, it's objective reality. Those are her words. Objective reality. So it begins. Oh, speaking of war, North Korea is starting to make noise. And they're saying the U.S. is trying to start a war against the communist state, and it will respond, Korea, to war with war. Saturday's statement coming after the president issuing a fresh warning last week to Iraq and North Korea that there would be consequences if they produce weapons of mass destruction. Bush demanded that the North allow U.N. experts to inspect its suspected nuclear weapons program. The North Stalinist regime regularly issues strident, hardline statements against the U.S. So you've got to, you know, take this with a grain of Korean salt. Imagine a trillion laptops in every drop of water. That's the headline. Imagine a trillion laptops in every drop of water. And during the break, I'm going to let you imagine what that might be. A million laptops in every drop of water. Millions upon millions of computers have been squeezed into a droplet of water. That's right, paving the way for the creation of biocomputers that can operate within the human body and will have unique uses in medicine. The biological nanocomputer uses DNA as its software. DNA as its software. I guess some DNA would be better than others, right? Like some operating systems from some certain companies that start with M are better than others. So if you got good DNA, you'd have a really cool processor, and if your DNA was... Well, wait a minute, I'm drifting from the story here. Uses DNA as its hardware, and is so small that a trillion of them can work simultaneously in a single drop. Theory suggests the so-called DNA computers will have the edge over silicon chips in their ability to carry out many calculations at once. Now, an Israeli team, figures, right, has taken this idea forward by investigating how to make these computers work in a biological environment such as a cell. Though these computers have a long way to go before they become practical, research published in the journal Nature is suggesting that they may one day be able to screen genetic material for faulty genes or even be used inside cells where they could sense abnormalities and manufacture a drug in response. Now, is that cool or what? Let's think about that. Something, a group of machines that go into your body and they go circulating around in there, and they're not doing anything unless something comes along that they've been programmed to notice. You know? Oh, here comes cancer. Here comes some cancer cells. Wait a minute. These cells shouldn't be dividing at this rate. Attack. Attack. And these machines would attack the instant the cellular division got out of control, which, of course, you'd never notice until it gets to be a big lump or something. But these would do it at the very instant something like this got started, and they'd stop it, or maybe they'd notice that one of, the walls of a blood vessel in your head were beginning to get thin, and they'd go to work making it thicker, or they'd notice perhaps that your heart wasn't beating correctly, or there was a barely perceptible abnormality of some sort in the heart, and they would go in and fix it before anything happened. That's what they're talking about here. Billions of computers inside one drop of rain. That's the kind of technology that we're moving toward. Can you close your eyes and imagine that? We're actually pretty close. How could we have gone this fast? How could we have gone this fast? Have you ever wondered about that? How we could have gone this fast? In other words, I'm, 56 years old, right? And I remember television. I remember that's probably one of my earliest memories of my dad proudly carrying home this television set. It was gigantic, and it had this little tiny round 7-inch picture. And so we were one of the first peoples on our block with TV. And the reason I bring this up is, in our lifetimes, it's probable that we're going from the invention of television, which is a pretty early technological stage, when you're talking about in a lifetime getting to the possibility of billions of tiny computers in one droplet of water or droplet of anything. billions of tiny computers. Now, doesn't that seem like suspiciously fast development to you? I mean, you're looking at one lifetime here, yours, mine, right? But before it took so long for mankind to so consider the quickening, the pace of technology. It is suspiciously quick. Those are my comments. All right, open lines for the balance. Oh, Richard C. Hoagland was going to be here tonight, but he's a little bit under the weather, and so we'll put it off a couple of days. He was going to be here in the first hour, and he was going to talk about Mars, for one thing. He's got a couple of subjects, but certainly Mars. And I really need to mention something about that myself. I'm going to mention it again and see if any of you grasp this. The big news last week, and it only had to do with Mars, the news. Check me here if I'm wrong on any of this, but the story said that the ice caps on Mars are going to melt. And they're doing so because the sun is getting hotter. The sun is getting hotter, and the ice caps on Mars are going to melt. Now, What hit me about the story, and that's the way they covered it in the media, and you know, you're probably either going, ah, well, Mars, who cares? You know, that's Mars. Worry about our own damn planet. A lot of people have that attitude. Well, maybe you ought to. And I'm not a scientist, but it seems to me that if the old third rock from the sun here, you know, being where it is, relative to Mars and to the sun, well, it just seems to me the story might have focused a little bit on exactly what this would mean for good old Earth. And I was going to have Richard comment on that. It's pretty radical if it'll melt the ice caps on Mars, and what is it going to do on Earth? And somehow the major media just absolutely missed, completely missed, you know, the whole question, even the question of what it would do to Earth. And I was pondering that, and hardly anybody asked the question. I did. I looked at it and said, wait a minute here. This is a really interesting story about Mars, but it seems to me it's a much bigger story about what would happen to the Earth if nobody asked the question. So what does that tell you about the state of our media today? Pretty pathetic, huh? Okay. Open lines. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Maureen from San Diego.
Well, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I haven't spoke to you since October.
That's a while.
Yeah, I talked to you about when the GIS were on.
The Ghost Investigators Society, and they'll be on, of course, again, too. What's up, hon? We don't have a lot of time for the break here.
Okay. I wanted to let you know that I've been feeling a presence that's been with me ever since I moved into my first apartment in 1995.
This is kind of an extension of the entities we were talking about on Friday?
Well, I couldn't get on yesterday.
Friday, you mean? Yes, we were talking about entities attacking. Now, you haven't been attacked, have you?
No, Well, as soon as I moved into my first apartment here in La Mesa in San Diego, I was making like lunch or something on the counter, and then I heard this woman's voice call my name.
All right, hold on. What was your name?
Maureen.
All right, right. Hold on during the break, and I'll try and bring you back and get all this.
I've been drifting on the sea of heartbreak.
Good morning, everybody.
Trying to get myself ashore. For so long.
It's a brand new week of Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001. listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
Well, here's some cheery news for Monday. Three of the Antarctic's largest glaciers are rapidly thinning. Associated Press story. And in the last 10 years, have lost up to 150 feet of thickness in some places. Holy mackerel. 150 feet of thickness in some places. The three glaciers in western Antarctica have collectively lost 37.6 cubic miles to the ocean. Holy moly. That's enough to raise global sea levels by 15 thousandths of an inch. What's really important, said one scientist, is that we see these glaciers changing with time in a surprising manner, meaning they're beginning to melt faster and faster. Now, this also coincides with the news about Mars, right? That, that you know, they just somehow left the Earth part out of it. I say again, I really think, and I've thought for a long time, that it's all connected to the action on the sun, whether it's on Mars or here. All right, back now to the young lady who has the entity problem, and you are back on the air, hon.
Hi.
Hi, okay. Where were you?
After I first lived in my apartment in La Mesa, then I moved to El Cajon in my second apartment.
Right.
And then I noticed that when I was sitting on top of my bed watching TV, I'd always feel it. Then, and because you don't understand it, because you have cats.
Yes.
I have cats, too, and they would be looking at something. And they do it here, too, because I live here in a condo now in San Carlos. And I noticed that they're staring at something. And
well, they may be staring at an entity. They may be staring at what we call, you know, a shadow person. I know you've heard a lot of talk about that. We think that cats see them because their metabolic rate is so much faster than ours.
Yeah. And also, I don't feel them when I'm watching TV here, but I always feel them, like, just before I go to bed. I feel them. I feel them like they're, like I do with my other apartments, I feel them like they're sitting down or...
Well, there's an answer for that, too. Thank you. It's because you're at your most vulnerable. You know, you're getting a little closer to that sleep state that we talk all about all the time on this program, that sort of a twilight zone. You're not quite in it yet, but you're headed that way because you're sleepy. And there is a vulnerable, interesting time, this little twilight zone of sleep, I call it, when all kinds of interesting things can be seen and known and understood to be later forgotten most times. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi, this is Lindsay in Seattle.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, I just have a quick little story. Speaking of cats, well, think outside the box with me for a minute. Okay?
That would be outside the cat box.
The cat box, yes. Okay. My boyfriend had a cat named Trixie, that awesome cat, gray, really cute. Anyways, Trixie died. She was like 8 and went on to heaven or whatever. Anyways, like 3 days later, we're like sitting in the living room watching, I don't know, some show, X-Files or something.
Yeah.
It's late. It's like almost 11. And we see this little shadow cat figure pop out from behind the couch and then like just disappeared. It kind of made a little noise and disappeared into the couch.
Well, if there can be shadow people, then why not shadow cats?
I know. It's weird. I don't know. I mean, do you think it was, I mean, something? I mean, do you really think it was a shadow cat? Is that possible?
Well, yes, but you're the witness, so the question is, do you think it's possible? Is that what it was? Saw it, I didn't. Could it be? I can answer yes. You should be able to tell us.
I think so. Yeah, I really think so. But I just wanted to tell you about that. I thought, since you have cats and stuff. You
know. All right. Yes, thank you very much. Well, it's long been my view that animals have souls. You know, if you're an animal person, then I don't know how you could think anything else. Cats are as individual as we are in personality, temperament, habits, likes and dislikes, jealousies. They exhibit all kinds of emotions. I mean, a lot of people are going to say, oh, come on. But they do, and real animal people who are close to animals know that I'm right. And for the rest of you, you will never know I'm right. You'll just laugh. But it's true. Animals have definite emotions, jealousies. moments of being ecstatic and really happy, moments of being depressed? How many traits would you follow, and when does one establish one has a soul? How many traits do you have to have before you have a soul? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Kathy in Oklahoma City.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey, I wanted to tell you a couple quick things, but first what you just said about the metabolic rate of cats.
Yes.
And their ability to see things. I noticed when my only child was born, he used to do what we called laughing at the laughing with the angels or whatever, when we'd lay him in his swing, which was a cradle swing where he would lay down flat.
Yes.
He would just be looking at something and just smiling.
Well, yes, of course, and I think seeing something, and I think, and as you go down, like birds, for example, their metabolic rate is screaming.
Yeah.
So it may be all a matter of frequency, the whole thing, what you can and can't see, and those who are able to see other frequencies are seeing other things. That's all. We're sharing the land here.
That's interesting. I want to tell you a quick thing about David Blaine and then the Nephilim, the David Blaine program.
Oh, you think David Blaine is Nephilim?
No.
No, all right.
No, I just want to tell you a factoid. I taped all the David Blaine programs, and I was he is really good with a lot of his tricks, and including the levitation. Every time he goes to levitate, you know, he sort of like sets himself up and prepares himself and everything, and he's not standing at a certain angle to where he's up on one toe or anything like that. But the one thing he does do, if you notice, if you pay attention, he always goes, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. And at the same time, he reaches down and slaps his shoe. I don't know what he does with his shoe.
You know, I haven't seen this, so I don't know.
Right, but you'll like it when you do. But anyway, he does do that every time. And then afterwards, you know, he acts like he's expended a huge amount of energy. And he always leans over and, like, grabs the ground or his shoe or whatever. So I thought perhaps a plexiglass thing coming out of his shoe or something like that. But it's not an it's an optical illusion, but not in the way that other guy was talking about.
Well, you're claiming that he does not go up on one toe, right?
Right. Both feet are off the ground.
I believe that. I mean, I saw the photo.
Yeah.
And I don't think any toes were on the ground. However, one of my listeners sent in a video, which you can see on my website if you've got a computer, in which he simulates what Blaine did, and it looks pretty damn good, but not quite as good as Blaine's.
Right.
Blaine's is mystifying. I'd like to interview Blaine. You think he'd be an interesting interview?
He would be, but the only thing is he probably wouldn't give away any secrets, and, you know, that's the main thing we would all love to know.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't claim their secrets, does he? In other words...
Well, let me tell you this.
Does Blaine say they're tricks, or does Blaine say he's levitating? That's a gigantic distinction.
He says he performs magic. A quick example.
There you are.
One of the tricks he does is you pick a card, he doesn't look at it, then he shuffles the deck, throws it at a plate glass window.
Yeah.
Your card appears on the other side of the glass. This is in a restaurant where people are eating.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a magician's trick. Thank you. That sounds like a magician's trick, right? But not the levitation thing. Now, if his claim is that he actually levitates, really, really, really levitates, then I want to speak to him. If his claim is that he's just a very good magician and that it is a trick, I'm talking about his claim now, not what you think. Because I know some of you think he's the absolute legit real thing. Others think he's a trickster magician. I'd be interested in what he has to say. And it would be you've got to admit, it would be an interesting interview to see what claims he actually makes. So, Blaine people, tell Mr. Blaine I would like to speak with him, if you know his email address or how to get hold of his production company or his whoever. Just pass along that Art Bell's looking for David Blaine. We'll see. We'll see. I definitely would like to hear what he has to say. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning. I think we just missed them. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi. I've been trying to get to this line for a while now.
Well, hallelujah.
Hard. I tried.
Make sure your radio is turned off.
Yes.
Okay. And where are you?
I'm in Ontario. Ontario.
Ontario.
Yes, Canada.
Oh, Ontario. Oh, I thought California for a minute.
No.
Okay, excellent. What's your first name?
Donna.
Donna, what's up?
What's up? Yep. I had an entity story.
Okay.
Also, you're talking about the Twilight Zone, and I hear things.
Well, the Twilight Zone of sleep.
Yes, I heard in the spring of 2000, I heard the Trade Center's going down.
You did?
I did.
How do you know you did? How do you know?
It was something I can't even describe. It was a loud, loud noise, glass shattering.
Trouble is, you've realized this, you know, late. In other words...
late, yes. I didn't know what it was at the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand it, but after that, I did. I got those for years. When my stepfather died in 8 years ago, I heard him at the same time, but I was 30 miles away, and I was in that stage of trying to get to sleep.
Oh, there are many, many, many instances of that. Many, 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 many. You know, you communicate with those you love at times of stress and tension. So those sound like very raw talents. You know, if you're hearing something and you don't put it together until after the event happens, then it's somewhat subjective. When you hear from a relative, that's raw talent that probably most of us have. I think most of us have that. Now, if you want to talk about refined talent, there is Ed Dames coming up at the top of the hour. This is going to be a very, very interesting program with Ed Dames. Ed Dames, on the other hand, has made some extremely specific predictions on this program. You know, he does it publicly, and that is really sticking your neck out. And he stuck his neck out on It. Do you remember that on Dean Kamen's It? Ed Dame remote viewed that, hit it on the head. I will tell you about that and a whole lot more, you know, as that interview progresses. But he really did nail Kamen's It. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art Bell. wow, this is so exciting.
Yes, well, here you are. What's your first name?
Richard.
And where are you, Richard?
I'm well. How about yourself?
No, I didn't ask how. I'm spiffy. I asked where. Where are you?
Oh, where? Jeez. Redding, California.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments, and I had, like, a pretty unique paranormal experience, but I was wondering if maybe I could just email that to you and save a lot
of
time
on it. Yes, you certainly may. And your comments?
Venus, they theorize, used to be a planet with a sufficient amount of water or something like that, and
some people think that.
Well, actually, I don't know, scientists and stuff like that. But the point is it once had water and
globally warmed.
Yeah, it was too close to the sun or whatever, and it began this process where more water molecules or whatever, more greenhouse gases escaped from the water and leached from the rocks.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's all right. And that process would seem to be underway, they're suggesting, for Mars, essentially. And I still screech and scream, why is nobody asking what this means for Earth?
No kidding. I think it's because they know what it means for Earth. No one wants to accept it.
I know, but we're supposed to listen to a story that's all about how Mars ice caps are going to melt. It's going to get to be shirt-sleeve weather on Mars, they say. And they don't even say what's going to happen here.
I know. It'd be a great vacation plan, except we won't be able to go back home.
Incredible.
We should all, like, petition or something like that. Like freedom for, like, information.
Tell us what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
Petition, well, right?
Yeah, like that. You know how if the 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid can, you know, a grown-up or whatever, can get the information from the government, I wonder what the hell an entire, like, army of, like, mad people who are tired of being suppressed could do. I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about taking over the government, but... I mean, I don't know. I think that there would have to FBI's like I don't know. I'm really nervous, but
that's all right. Nerves cause you to stall.
Yeah, I hope I contributed to the program.
You did.
I really do. I have an honest paranormal type experience.
All right, listen. Email it to me at artbell. That's ARTBELL at mindspring.com. And once again, I would like to say once again that we are not accepting snail mail. It's very sad. It's really very sad. And I'm sorry that that is the case, but you know what's going on. And almost every media outlet is doing the same thing for some period of time. Till we probably start to feel that we're not going to get something poisonous that will kill us in the mail. And so in the meantime, the electronic media will have to substitute, will have to do. Fortunately, we've got that, the Internet. I feel sorry for the post office. And I know a lot of people could, you know, they could really care less, to use a modern phrase, care less. They just don't care about the post office, but they have served us faithfully and well for all, certainly all my life, and I grieve for their present position. For the employees, I grieve because they don't deserve this. They've already got a hard enough job, and you compound it with this crap, and you put the post office really into the red, and employees start having a tough time, and they're psychologically having a tough time anyway. There's a million mail sorters out there. It just, the whole thing stinks. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Shayla from Great Bend, Kansas.
On a cell phone.
Yes, sir, out here in Willing, West Virginia, in a big truck.
All right, Sheila, welcome.
Well, I need to tell you, sir, that I am fanatical about your show. You have rode with me so many miles. But I got a question for you.
Fire away.
Do you remember here a couple years ago, you had a guy send you a fax letter about this dissertation that he was going to do about semiconductivity with his daughter and a cat, taping toast to the cat to find out if it landed butter side down or butter side up?
Yes, I do.
I laughed my hoonies off on that. I was in South Dakota, and then the next night, bless it be, I got to hear the second half of the, he sent you another note.
Well, I believe, if I remember correctly, the second half said that if you take a cat and put buttered toast both above and below the cat at the same time,
right,
that
it would
hover in midair, defying gravity.
And it was so funny because he said, you know, the cat really did not appreciate it, neither did my wife. I about fell out of the truck on that.
Oh, yeah.
It was so funny. But you haven't heard anything else kooky like that, have you?
Well, you know, these things circulate over the Internet like a virus. Actually, very much like a virus. And I believe that's where I originally got it. Now, I thought it was rather unique at the time. We all know that buttered sides of bread always land first. But I think, you know, the second part about being able to defy gravity was particularly funny.
Well, anyways, bless you. I'm glad your back's feeling great. I prayed for Rush when we were supposed to, and I am so happy you took care of that loss down in Nashville.
Thank you.
We'll catch you on the flip side.
All right, take care. As a trucker, yeah, a lot of truckers out there. Boy, a lot of truckers out there. And I understand, going through the night, music is really nice. And I love music. I mean, it is a deep, important, really important part of my life. In fact, actually profound. However, when you're out there on the highway and you're driving for not just a little while, you know, like we all do short trips, but instead you're spending entire days and part of the nights or all night long in a truck, then the music gets old very quickly. Very quickly. And what keeps you awake instead is mental activation. In other words, exercising your mental muscle. And you do that when you listen to talk radio. But the beat of music eventually gets monotonous, even dangerous on the road. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. If you'll stay right there, Major Ed Dames is coming up next.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired December 10th, 2001.
This song seems so fitting for the beginning of Ed Dames on any given night.
Romeo and Juliet.
Because he is, he's Dr. Doom. That's his nickname, and I have always enjoyed Major Ed Dames greatly. I'm sure, and I know many of you have too, judging from all the feedback that I get. A lot of people go berserk, though. You know, they hate him, and they say, I can't listen to that. Well, in a moment, I'm going to tell you what Ed Dames said on my program about Ginger. Because you may have forgotten, you know, It, back when everybody was speculating about what It was a long time ago. And he nailed that sucker right on the head. I mean, he flat nailed it. Ed Dames is coming up here in a few moments. He was part of our government's remote viewing program. I was sitting here thinking, I've interviewed, I believe, every single remote viewer that had anything to do with that program. The reason I do a lot of programs on remote viewing is because remote viewing is real. I know it's real, and a lot of other scientists know it's real. That's all there is to it. It's real. Other things we wonder about to some degree, and I'm sure many of you still wonder about remote viewing, but I don't. I have interviewed enough of the people who really knew what was going on, including Ed, but all of them, actually, that I know it's real. And I think that's why I pay so much attention to it, and Ed Dames is of particular interest because he tends to look where other remote viewers won't look. You know, he'll look at the negative side of things, and other remote viewers tend to be a little Pollyanna-like, you know, and it's human nature. I mean, you deal with different human beings, you get different things. With Ed, he takes a look at some of the darker stuff, and that's always held a macabre sort of fascination for me. He is the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. U.S. Army retired now, creator of the technical remote viewing, and co-creator of Mind Dazzle, an original member of the U.S. Army prototype remote viewing training program. He subsequently served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, currently serves as Executive Director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. So in a moment, I will I'll tell you how exactly he nailed it by recalling his words. Always a very provocative thing to do, and it's very provocative to stick your neck out. He does that all the time, and his neck is intact. All right, here we go. The following was said, actually, for the record, during the February 13th, 2001 appearance on my program. That was February 13th, folks, of 2001. All right, just so you know. Ed says, you asked me if I had remote viewed it. I did, in fact, ask him to remote view it, please. My answer was in the affirmative. I stated I did this not to engage in industrial espionage nor reverse engineer, in other words, theft of somebody else's hard work. He did say that, remember? But to demonstrate that with expert remote viewing, there are no secrets. I only performed a couple of remote viewing sessions and outlined the results on my show, and he sure as hell did. Refer to the show archives, and you all can go back and do that yourself. Dean Kamen's new invention, this is a quote, Dean Kamen's new invention is a personal transportation machine. It is like a cross between a scooter and a pogo stick. It is a very energy efficient, electromechanical, non-polluting device. It is extremely stable, incorporating flywheel and gyro technology. You cannot accidentally drop it on a curve. like one could a motorcycle. It reminds me of an unrestrained amusement park ride, moving gently along with a quiet whirring, almost like a life form, flexing as it moves. Now, you tell me that back on February 13th, Ed Dames, Major Dames, didn't nail this one to the wall. Nailed it flat, nailed it in every way to the wall. So if you wanted to know what remote viewing can do, there is a relatively short-term piece of proof for you. And I know what Ed would say, that he did not stick his neck out to do what he did here. Really happy to be able to bring you proof like this of, again, a relatively short-term viewing come true. He didn't stick his neck out. He'll say that humbly, right? Right, Ed?
Very humbly, yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Dr. Doom, at your service again.
Yeah, you didn't stick your neck out on this. It's simply the way it goes when you do a professional remote viewing job and you really make it a project. You get it, you claim 100% of the time, right?
That's correct, when it's done as a group bar. And, again, this is a very exotic, cutting-edge, it's probably still ahead of its time technology, this animal called remote viewing. But when it's done professionally, it's as professional as any other vocation, airline pilot, driver training, teacher, whatever.
That good. You know, there are people who argue with that, and they say, oh, well, no, remote viewing at best hits it 30% of the time. I'm sure you've heard that said, right?
Now, as an individual...
I want to add, Ed, those people are not saying remote viewing doesn't work. They're just saying that 30%, only 30%, and they say that is an astounding hit rate. But you're claiming something much higher toward, like, no errors.
Well, as experts, Art, and there aren't that many experts, you can count them on one hand, that the number of experts in the United States...
Yeah,
we have a running 20% error rate that we acknowledge as experts. 80% of our data is individuals. Nominally, 80% is correct. But when we work as a team, the mutually corroborating data in this discipline is 100%.
How big a team? How big a team is required for 100%?
Well, you can do it with two experts, as little as two experts. For instance, on a project we'll talk about tonight, there were two experts used.
Right.
But we would prefer three or four.
And in order to be 100%, whether it's two or three or four, is it required that all agree?
Correct. All must agree. The data all must agree on the same data points, yes, to be 100%. This we can guarantee to a corporate client. This is the kind of money-back guarantee that we can offer to a corporate client.
Money-back guarantee?
First in history, yes. The TRV Institute.
That's pretty damn good, Ed. So if a corporation comes to you, they pay whatever they pay, whatever the fee is, and the guarantee is either what we say is accurate or you get your money back?
That's correct. No one else in history has been able to do this, not even the best natural psychics that ever lived. What remote viewing is it's
wow.
Essentially systematic clairvoyance, very disciplined, very disciplined.
So if you're not good, you'd starve to death, huh?
We would,
yeah.
Indeed. And so the Dean Kamen device, when you asked me to remote view that,
yes.
Of course I didn't get any details because that would get into the actual technology.
Oh, Ed, you got as close as a human could possibly get without getting so specific that you would have given away technology.
That's right, and that would not have been fair because people worked hard on that device, and that would for all intents and purposes be industrial espionage or what is in the business now called business research and to use the vernacular. So that took me, by myself, three remote viewing sessions to produce that amount of information, alone, working alone. So I know that I run a 20% error rate, but I have ways of error trapping to bring it up to 90%, meaning I'll still be stuck with a 10% error rate nominally. That would not be the case if I used another expert remote viewer.
How do you do that?
Well,
I mean, just give me the rough outline of it. In other words, how do you take 80% and make it 90% on personal work?
Okay, let me give you another example. Remember when I announced the Egypt Air Flight 990, the cause of that crash on your show?
Yes.
Okay, that was only two remote viewing sessions that I performed by myself. And I said there was an altercation in the cabin by crew members.
That's right.
That brought the plane down, and that when the voice recorder is found,
yes.
you would hear. Okay.
Yes.
Now, the first session that I did on the cause of the Egypt Air Flight 990, that produced information about an altercation, that there was something going on between people and not a machine breaking down, no explosions, those
right.
kinds of things.
Right.
I ran a second remote viewing session against the same specific pattern of information, that is the cause of the crash. That second session was, it's clean. It's totally objective, even though I've, as a disciplined remote viewer, you do not allow the first session to influence the second.
How could you not?
It's difficult, Art. I train my students to make sure that that does not happen.
I mean, that's like saying, do not, I don't care what the hell you do right now, do not, under any circumstances, think in your mind of a pink elephant. Do not picture a pink elephant in your mind.
I'll tell you why we can do that, Art.
Totally impossible, Ed.
It's not, because this is a skill. It is not a thinking process. It's a perceiving process. There is no thinking involved. There's no creative imagination. So think of a downhill skier.
Yes.
Let's say the first run, would a downhill skier want the second run on a different slope to influence the first run to influence his second run?
No.
He couldn't do that, right? That's
right.
Because skiing is a skill, and remote viewing is a skill as well. And my students are taught to make sure that every time they put that pen on the paper, they remain objective for at least 45 minutes, regardless of what they did in the
But I don't understand how you can get yourself into that absolutely objective state, or maybe it is not absolutely objective. You could not possibly ignore a consideration of your first session. You just couldn't ignore it. It would be there in your mind.
Art, that is not the case. It's the case. It's not the case because of the pace and the cadence with which we execute the session. It's just like a skier on a downhill run. The skier has no time to think. They've got to look at the trees ahead. It might be a new slope. And there's a pace and a cadence that's very, very important. You cannot learn that pace or cadence.
I give up, Ed. I give up. I couldn't do it.
Yes, you could. Yes, you could.
No,
I should
I
come down there and grab you by the stack and swivel and teach you.
No, I couldn't do it. At least in my present state, Ed, I couldn't do it, so therefore I cannot imagine it. That's why I'm asking you such hard questions about it, because it just seems impossible to me. But I will accept that people can do all kinds of things I can't do, so could be.
Well, I've seen things that people fly planes to and do all kinds of things, and I would say the same thing. I could never do that. So I know where you're coming from.
All right. Well, I'll accept that. That you can get objective for a second session. That confirms the first, and that gives you another 10%, huh?
And it gives you additional information by virtue of having more time on target.
Sure.
So that is the second session is when I perceived, not think, when I perceived the idea that there were crew members and not passengers that were attacking, that were fighting.
Right.
So that added time on target gives you more detail, just like painting and oil painting, where you have to prepare the canvas, lay down, you know, a matte color, and then slop some oils there. It takes a long time to get that detail up there. It isn't just done immediately, but the more time on target, the more you resolve the images. The 9/11 attack, when we told the Special Operations Command who was the funding source for the attack,
right.
That took three experts and eight sessions to do. Now, a missing child case that we're still...
By the way, I'd like to call to everybody's attention the fact that early on, you said the attack against the World Trade Center was orchestrated and carried out from a command center near Kandahar, Afghanistan, long before anybody could even spell Afghanistan or even thought about Afghanistan, or when we were just beginning to think about it after the attack itself, you nailed where you thought Osama bin Laden had done the command work. and in a bunker near Kandahar, and that sure does make sense now.
Actually, we pinpointed it on the 12th of September.
Yeah, you gave
us a map. We worked all night on that.
You gave us a map. I've got a map.
Well, it isn't just a map. It is actually, if you look at the, you can go to remoteviewing.la or any of the website, any of the links on your website that Keith has posted, and you can see a sketch of Ahmad Shah Durrani's tomb in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and you can see the bunker complex underneath the tomb.
That's
and we passed that to the commander, Special Operations Command.
I wonder if they have acted on that in the bombing campaign. Do you,
No, that one can't be acted on in bombing. It has to be a special operations mission, Art, because you would destroy the Ahmad Shah Durrani designed Kandahar. He was the architect for the city, and his tomb is the center of the city. It's a beautiful, beautiful structure. That is why we were able to pinpoint the location so fast, because his structure is so beautiful and unique. We were able to match it with known data.
Uh-huh. Very distinctive, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's why it only took 8 sessions to do by experts. A missing child case, for instance, is 45 sessions. We're running 45 sessions, 3 experts. And now we just discovered a second body at the site, so we know we're dealing with a serial killer. Many more sessions to do that. For the anthrax, NBC Anthrax Letter Center that we'll talk about momentarily,
yes,
that took 2 experts and 18 sessions.
Now, you know, on these big national issues...
The industrial strength projects.
Yeah, industrial strength. You end up turning over the information to... I won't ask specifically, but authorities. How do you get the information where it needs to go?
I pass it myself, Art. I still have contacts, my old cronies in the Department of Defense, and the FBI, I pass it myself. I talk to the agents, I talk to the field offices, and the governor's office in this case. The subject matter is the NBC TV Tom Brokaw anthrax letter originator. We were hunting this entity down.
Right.
And that the actual letter that is the result of those 18 sessions is posted on a website. And the link is available through either my website or your...
I know. We've got a link up tonight. Every time you're on, we murder your website, and then people say, it's a conspiracy. You said I could see it, and I can't see it. The website...
No, we fixed that.
You've got it...
Yeah, we fixed that. So the letter went to Thomas Ridge, who's the director of the new director for the Office of the Homeland Security, and he's the former governor of Pennsylvania. And it went to the FBI field office in Philadelphia and to the FBI resident agent in State College, Pennsylvania, which is where, very close to there, where the originator of the NBC anthrax letter lives.
Oh, well, I'll be damned. You have fixed it.
And we also stated where he works.
Info on terrorist activities. Let's see if that one's going. Simaster, I'll be damned, Ed. It's actually up. All right. Well, if you want that information, folks, his website is up, at least for the moment. And if you'll go to my website, rfl.com, tonight's guest info, you're going to want to read info on terrorist activities. You'll see that link outlined on my website. So, Ed, hold on a moment. Let's see if it really holds up, shall we? The information on terrorist activities is on his website, psispymaster.com. Link right there. Go to my website, program tonight's guest info, and look below the name Ed Dames. Go to the website. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
Of war desire.
listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
I mean, you've got to admit that Ed has just hit these dead on the money. Dead on the money. And now he's sticking his neck out, my phrase, he says not, about the Brokaw letter. The anthrax Brokaw letter. So we're going to talk in some detail about that coming up in just a moment, if you will keep it where you've got it. All right, we're going to talk now about the specifically about the Tom Brokaw letter. Now, I'm not going to give out all of the information on the air. Ed is going to be very specific about what he is going to say, including where this person is employed, and I am not going to give that part out on the air. I warn you and Ed right now. I'm not going to give that part out. We can give everything else out, and if you want to know the rest of it, it's on his website. I say again, the information you're about to hear in detail, including a little bit that I'm not going to put on the air, is available on the link on my website, artbell.com, tonight's guest info, the name Ed Dames, and down where it says info on terrorist activities. You can read all of the details, and the site is staying up, thankfully. So go up there if you will. Right now, let's short of that specific information, that piece of information, Ed, and I know it's really specific and it'd be good to get on the air. I just don't want to, for some of my own legal reasons, I just don't want to cause a problem.
I understand that.
All right, so other than that, let's have it. What do you know about the NBC Brokaw letter?
Well, we specifically targeted it in order to maintain chain of custody. We didn't look at anthrax terrorism in general or something like that. That's too broad a subject. So we used a specific target. And that a remote viewing target, and that was the letter that was mailed to NBC TV to address to Tom Brokaw.
Yeah, they've shown it on TV.
Mm-hmm. We used that as a target reference, and we wanted to know initially who the originator was.
Right.
Okay. So that data produced information about a single individual working alone. Which the FBI has assumed after a while anyway. So our information corroborated that. Then we turned our attention to, we wanted first, Art, to make sure that to understand how many people we were dealing with. Were we dealing with a group, disparate locations, or a single group in one location, or a single individual?
Well, people just want to know, was it Al-Qaeda, you know, the same people?
Yes, yes, and it didn't take us long to realize we were dealing with a domestic terrorist, another Timothy McVeigh type, who has an axe to grind and is an American. There's no connection with a terrorist group.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's...
Is it your impression that this individual simply used what happened with the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and all the rest of it as a catalyst with reference to a time to act? Or had it already been planned for about that time?
I think the aforementioned art, the first point, that they used it as a target of opportunity. He had the stuff, he had the anthrax, and was waiting for an excuse to use it, and saw that as a cover, a possible decoy, and to take some of the attention that would ordinarily be drawn to a singular act like that was now spread out all over the place because the authorities were searching for so many things.
So
it's a cover.
It's an individual, and he's in what area?
It is a male, and he is in he's within 10 miles of State College, Pennsylvania.
State College, Pennsylvania.
Yes, near Penn State.
That's sticking. Well, no. It's, of course, for you, it's you'll say it's not sticking your neck out.
Oh no, no, no. We know where he's employed too.
And
in fact, we passed the information to the FBI a week ago, and if they can't roll him up in the next couple of days, we can smoke him out. My colleagues and I, by actually sketching, we have good sketches that you can see on the internet. We posted a good cross section. My colleague's website. There's links over there to a cross section of our work. I'll talk about some of those sketches momentarily. But we can get detailed sketches now and actually draw the street and name the street where this person lives.
You know, Ed, let me ask you about something. I mean, this is so specific. We even know, for example, that you're claiming that he brewed all this up basically in his basement, right?
He didn't brew it up. He had access to the organism itself, and he provided the feedstock. He knew how to grow it. We have a lot of information about how he was trained, and we tracked him. He appears to be a chemical engineer, not a microbiologist, but he has experience in microbiology. He knows how to grow organisms, and he does understand how to prepare aerosolized anthrax, how to weaponize it.
I'm told this was very sophisticated.
Yeah, I have some information I cannot share with you on the air about his background that we now know. But he does have a glove box in the house. He knows how to use a glove box.
What is that?
Okay, a glove. When you work with highly plutonium or a highly infectious disease, you need a box, and it's called a glove box because it has a big pair of rubber or latex gloves that you stick your hands into, and you manipulate the material inside of this box.
So
it's sealed. It's hermetically sealed, so nothing can get out.
It's like a private level 4 operation.
It's like a P4 overpressure box instead of a containment facility where people wear spacesuits and everything.
It's
a box with that.
Yep.
So he actually prepared the letter using that glove box. We have sketches, some rough sketches of him doing that on our website.
Now, so, a lot of people are, and I don't know whether you've looked at this aspect of it or not, but that letter, the Dashiell letter, and then I think one other, that's about all you hear about. Have all the rest of these cases, particularly the utterly mystifying ones, like the poor old lady in Connecticut, are these cross-contamination cases from those?
They appear to be, unfortunately, they appear to be cross-contamination. It looks like this individual has really seeded a lot of this chaos. Now, I do not know for sure if there are any other individuals involved. I do not know for sure if the Dashiell letter is the same, even though the Bureau says it is, because we did not look, and we only trust our own work.
Right, right.
And we did not look. It probably is. But I don't know that to be certain because we maintain chain of custody with the target. So after they roll him up, they can ask him. They might even ask him what his motive was. But motives are usually used when you're hunting someone.
Well, there's two points. One is, I know you sort of brushed off, but if you're talking about somebody who's a mass killer wannabe, a terrorist, if this person is domestic, then this person, in all likelihood, is either listening to the show or will be informed about this program.
Very quickly.
You are threatening to expose him even more specifically, with streeties on or whatever. And you do this in all kinds of cases. Now, if you're right about this...
We are right, aren't we?
I understand your claim. And I understand the history that makes me believe you. But this guy's going to want to kill you, Ed.
Well, I'm in the Sandwich Islands, and that's a long trip. And by the time he gets his plane tickets, and I hope he brushes all the anthrax off his hands, but by the time he gets here, I that's a long boat ride, and we'll be watching him the whole way.
Huh.
We're going to smoke.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to imagine that in some of these kinds of cases where you're in the process of nailing somebody to the wall on something this serious, that there would be a definite motive to dispatch you with prejudice.
Well, as a former soldier, there were lots of folks that wanted to do that in the KGB. So it's kind of par for the course, business as usual, Art.
So you all are hearing about this for the first time tonight. And again, the detailed information, or much more detail than we have just given you, is on the website. Which is, there's a link on my website. If you want to read about it, go have at it. And we'll see if Ed is dead on this one. And I know you say you will be.
Yeah, it took us about 18 sessions, remote viewing sessions, average 45 minutes an hour sessions. Two experts.
You don't know when he's going to be caught, right? You have no way of... Timelines are tough, I know. You can't exactly know when he's going to be caught. And, of course, it depends on whether the feds actually pour resources into what you've given them.
Not necessarily. We're going to smoke them out regardless of what the feds do, because we're going to actually draw the sketches of his home and his lab and his garage, his car, and his workplace, so that both his coworkers and his neighbors will know who he is. Not without naming him and without us getting in a legal bind,
yes.
We can sketch the house so specifically and his cars and his workplace so specifically without providing any names, so that we can protect ourselves legally and yet still get the information across to the public, regardless of what the FBI does.
So, do you have any confidence about when he'll be caught?
No, I don't have any confidence there, only in the information, the accuracy of the information we're providing.
So this is another I hate the U.S. domestic kind of thing.
You got it. Now, it took us a while. We had to do a lot of work to understand. At first, we thought we had to ascertain what kind of a working environment he was in. We knew he worked with agricultural products. So we assumed that he might, at first we thought he was could have been any number of things, a medical lab, a veterinarian lab, a government lab, a company, a hospital. But it took us a while to realize he was working with agricultural products. So that was one thing. And then the data began to weigh toward an academic institution rather than a company. So we had to take that into account. But in the end, what nailed down his location for us, without giving any specifics, was a very unique. The collective unconscious is a wonderful problem solver. It has elegant algorithms to solve these kinds of problems. So if you're a disciplined expert in remote viewing, the matrix, the collective unconscious, can really help you solve these problems. And what it pointed out for us was a very unique structure. You recall last hour or half hour when I mentioned that the tomb of the chief architect of Kandahar was a very unique structure?
Yes.
Well, we ended up, our collective unconscious ended up pointing out a very unique structure that was associated with where he lives and his workplace.
As I understand, yes.
And it took us a while to resolve what that was. We spent a lot of time trying to figure out what this thing was. And it turned out, again, without giving out any locational information, to my colleague and I, it looked like a sculpture. But it was aesthetically very unappealing. And it had some very contorted metal associated with it. We thought, what kind of a sculpture is this?
Mm-hmm.
And at first we thought it might be a fountain, but there was no water associated with it. So we began to do a lot of detailed sketching on this particular item that unconscious pointed out to us. Then we began to realize it was not only a sculpture, it was a tool. It was a tool and a sculpture combined. And then finally resolved the knowledge that it was a sundial. But not any sundial, a very unique sundial.
Unique to a specific location.
Unique to, it's a public sundial, and it's unique to a very, very specific location. And this is what gave us the anchor point and nailed down the location. And now our job becomes infinitely easier, because we're not looking for a needle in a haystack anymore. We know exactly where we're at geographically in the state of Pennsylvania. We know exactly where we're at. And all the rest of our work now is just the detailed work.
Well,
all the building.
I'll give you this, Ed, and I think most of my audience will too. You know, we run a lot of people who claim psychic ability in varying degrees of paranormal capability on the show and blah, 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 blah. But you don't mess around. You lay out exactly and precisely checkable, verifiable things that come along and absolutely get verified. I mean, there's just no escaping it. You do that, and I give you credit for that. Ed, everybody wants to know, if the United States is going to face, is facing an imminent chemical, biological, or nuclear threat as a result of the war we're in right now. And, of course, we seem to be chasing the Taliban to ground in Afghanistan. But this Al-Qaeda thing seems to be worldwide. And so you'd have to be a damn fool not to imagine that there is the possibility of some real serious occurrence in this country. Do you happen to know if we're facing such a thing?
We're facing something else that's just as bad. Not that, though.
But not that. You're saying, really, from these terrorists, we've had the worst?
I think so, Art.
Good. Actually, that's well, there's a little bit of good news.
Well, you want the bad news?
Well, I just wanted to take a brief second to enjoy the good news.
I actually have three roles in my life. I have two hats and a cape. One of my hats is a Psy Spymaster.
Yes.
I do that. And then I'm a remote viewing teacher. I've been doing that for 18 years. And
yes,
my cape is the Dr. Doom cape.
Yeah,
I have to be a quick change artist on your show.
Well, I guess I've had enough enjoyment for the good news. Okay, the bad news is...
North Korea.
Oh my God, North Korea. I read a story earlier tonight about North Korea. In fact, Ed, I got a couple of stories here for you, really. Another one that confirms something you said earlier. But, yeah, the headline is, and this is the Associated Press, Saturday, December 8th. And, of course, you had something to say about North Korea long, long ago. And here we've got it. North Korea says U.S. being aggressive. North Korea accused the U.S. on Saturday of trying to start a war against the communist state and said it will respond to war with war. And the article goes on from there. But that's the Associated Press. What the hell's going on with North Korea?
They're desperate and they're scared. And their time has come. So Kim Jong-il, the son of Kim Il-sung, North Korea has been on the Matrix on executive director of the Matrix Intelligence Agency. It's a private intelligence group. North Korea is number one on our watch list right now, and rightly so. We believe that they're going to spring. They are going to actually become so scared they do something foolish on the Korean Peninsula. And as I've said years ago, it appears and still appears after these years that the first use of an atomic weapon, a nuclear weapon in anger, where casualties result, will be on the Korean Peninsula.
Are we sure the North Koreans have nuclear weapons?
You know, it appears that they may have, it used to be 1.5. It appears that they may still have 1.5 to 3.
Nuclear.
But that's enough to be militarily decisive for a while.
Skinny. One is enough if used to turn the whole world upside down. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
So you believe they have 1.5 or 3?
They've got enough plutonium they had enough plutonium 10 years ago to make 1.5 warheads.
Gotcha. All right. Ed, hold on. We're at the top of the hour already. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn.
Mark Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
So, according to Ed, the good news is we've heard the last of these terrorists. We don't have a big attack coming. But on the other hand, the bad news is what it was said to be years ago by Ed. North Korea is going to use a nuclear weapon. More in a moment. So, in other words, Ed, you can see or sense or know through remote viewing that North Korea is now at an ultimately desperate point, or getting very close to that. Is that correct?
It's correct. But let me backtrack just a moment and qualify something that you said and that
okay.
I commented on. It's about what I mean is that the worst of the attacks, the terrorist attacks in the continental United States, are over.
Okay.
But there appears to be, we know in our work, that there's still one highly trained Al-Qaeda cell that we did not catch. And they had a mission to attack a nuclear power plant, and that did not come off. They're still around. So what they are going to do, if anything, I do not know.
At this point.
At this point, that's correct.
And
we're having a very difficult time tracking them for lots of technical reasons that I really.
So they're still in the country somewhere.
Yes.
But again, the worst of it, at any rate, the worst of it, meaning the Trade Center and the Pentagon,
yes.
that's a kind of level thing is over.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, yes. As far as I see.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So something still could happen. And I'm glad you got that in. I made it sound as though it was all over.
Now, it's very difficult for the cell to operate now, as you might, because the attention that they're people are observant, and it's so difficult for them to operate in the present environment. But they have still not been rolled up. So.
Okay. Again, North Korea briefly, and I know. I hear they're starving to death. Their people are starving to death. They do have nuclear weapons, but it's hard to imagine why they would use one, or why they would start a war, or would they just calculate now to be a fairly opportune time? The Middle East is going up in smoke, and of course we're in Afghanistan, and who knows where else we're going. Just an opportune time?
Art, you cannot use logic with North Korea. You cannot use any logic that you or I are familiar with North Korea.
Yeah, I believe that. I do believe that. They're just totally alien to our way of thinking.
They might as well be the Borg or something else in terms of their national policies.
And, Borg.
Or it's been, four generations of insanity. There's no logic that can be applied to their government.
That's really interesting that it would go on for that many generations of insanity. It's off the point entirely, but you don't have any idea of why that is, do you, Ed? You would think you'd get one crazy generation, maybe like Hitler, you know, in Germany, but you wouldn't think it would last so long, and Korea's been crazy so long.
They've been isolationists, and it has to come to an end somehow, some way. Unfortunately, this way will be war. And not a dissolution of government or a decompression of government, as in Cuba, for instance. Cuba would be a comparative example of something that's decompressing over time. You know, all of the steam is being released slowly, generation after generation, decade after decade. And now you have a fairly peaceful situation in what was an isolationist environment. Not so with North Korea. The hatreds have been fueled and the pressure pot has been boiling and there's been no escape valve.
All right. I want to read you a story I've got here. And somebody particularly referenced you in the email. They sent the story and then referenced you in the email. And I want to see if this might be on target. It says, hello. Didn't Ed Dames talk about a fungus spreading and killing lots of trees and other plants? If you read the whole article, probably the hair will stand up on your neck as it did in mine. Note that this fungus is of an, and the story begins here, quote, unknown origin. The oak disease, it says, is caused by a recently named fungal organism called, and I'll spell it, P-H-Y-T-R-O-P-H-T-O-R-A, and then R-A-M-O-R-U-M. I wouldn't endeavor to pronounce that. It also attacks a dozen other tree and plant species, including rhododendron, huckleberry, honeysuckle, coffeeberry, manzanita, buckeye, big leaf maple, bay laurel, evergreen, and mandrone. Continuing, preliminary tests on the disease indicate it enters through the bark of plants and trees rather than the roots, as many species do, and travels, get this, Ed, and travels in raindrops. So this faxer is wondering if what I just read you could have some relationship to what you told us so long ago about a fungus.
I'm aware of this particular fungus and aware of how it's spreading.
You are?
Yes. But the one that that we locked onto was a mutation of Claviceps purpurea, and it is the royal fungus.
So then
this attacks grasses, this particular one.
So then it's related to this, same first part of the name anyway.
No, I don't think it is, Art. I think they're totally different in phytopathological agents. In terms of phytopathology, they're different species.
Okay.
This one, the one I'm referring to, attacks grasses, maize, corn, sorghum, wheat, rice, food, human food.
Okay.
And animal food.
And animal food.
Yeah, or at least bovine species.
All right.
Cattle, so no food for cattle and no food for people in terms of grasses. 80% of the world eats those things that this thing attacks.
All right.
The climate's under stress. The ecosystem's under stress. When it's under stress, when you get sick, you don't recover easily. You die. That's why young people and old people die faster from things like inhalation, anthrax, Ebola, whatever.
Of course.
Their immune systems are not necessarily suppressed, but they're weak. Now, the entire ecosystem's immune system is suppressed by pollution. And so things like fungi can have a field day.
Huh. All right, so that is still ahead of us and to be discovered, or is that underway as we speak, Ed?
It's underway now, particularly in Africa.
Okay. Well, you've always stuck to your guns on all of that. You have remote viewed some global catastrophic event that will affect every single one of us. Most of us alive today have a shared destiny, you write, surrounding this event. That sounds pretty serious.
Yes, I think, and there's a pointer. There's a pointer in this particular time frame that's pointing at that event. It's a good clue as to what's going to happen to us, and that's that city off the coast of Cuba, that submerged city.
Oh, yes.
That is a clue to what I am talking about.
By the way, Ed, I guess you've heard that the news of that finally is broken in the mainstream press.
Yes. Our F.M. Bonzal and I, a colleague of mine, he teaches workshops with me at the Remote Viewing Campus in Los Angeles. F.M. and I remote viewed for your show that city to discern whether or not those sonar images fractal, non-fractal images, as the NASA buzzword for artificial structures, or just natural terrain features. And what we sketched were two very large pyramids on platforms, two of them. And we did some further work, on this particular on these particular features, and to establish connectivity, those kinds of things.
Right.
Now, we were interested in the civilization also. Who were these people? That was one thing. But before I get into that, I have to mention that this ancient city that's 2,200 feet underwater or so is not millions of years old. It's thousands of years old.
Thousands, right.
Not millions, which means that whatever happened to it happened thousands of years ago, not millions of years ago.
Well,
what happened to it was pretty catastrophic because it put it 2,200 feet under the water.
Thank you very much.
And we looked at the cause of this city's demise, and the cause is gravity. When you remote view the cause of that city's demise, the cause is gravity. And gravity, when you look at the origin of that, it happens to be a very large passing body that passes by Earth and causes Earth to wobble and tilt.
You mean like the famed Nibiru?
Yes, exactly so. In fact, right now, my team is watching a very significant deep space object that the International Astrophysical Union has termed 2001 KX76.
Oh.
And it's a good candidate for a Nibiru.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Roll over that again. Who observed this?
You can check it out on the internet. The International Astrophysical Union has astronomers are looking at this one particular object. It's in a class of big rocks that might be extraplanetary bodies, but as big as planets.
Yes.
And this particular one is labeled 2001 KX76.
And what do they tell us about...
I am saying it is a good... Oh, they're saying that it's a glowing red object. It's a chunk of something orbiting in Pluto's neighborhood. And it looks like it might be the ninth plus planet in our solar system. But it was only discovered about 10 years ago. It's been being watched. It's moving. But as far as we're concerned, it's a good candidate for this thing that passes Earth in our lifetimes, you and I, and causes this catastrophic event,
what?
Similar to the one that sank that city. Now, we know that the city is indeed related to the idea in the collective unconscious of Atlantis. And Atlantis, in our remote viewing research, it was actually centered in what is now Lake Titicaca, and they had many outlying cities. And that the Nazca lines in Peru,
yes,
and are actually associated with this particular civilization that built the city that's now submerged off of Cuba. So there's a relationship between that region, the people that lived in that region thousands of years ago, and the people that built that city.
Isn't that interesting? Well, all right. Look,
but you can't deny. It's going to be very difficult for science to once the actual, as remote viewers, we're saying, hey, there's two pyramids down there, and they're built by the people, and they're 2,200 feet under the water. There's only one conclusion that and you do not have to be a geophysicist to come to this conclusion. Nothing sinks 2,200 feet in the water, and there's no tidal wave that's that big. The only thing that can happen is the Earth tilts and shifts itself. It turns, and that causes what is on mountains now to be underwater, and vice versa.
Yes, yes. How specific can we be with regard to what is in store for the United States proper? Let us begin there. I don't know what's going to happen in the rest of the world. It'll be a worldwide event. But how about our country? Coastlines, who's got to worry? Where is it going to be safe? That kind of...
I don't know. I can only... only common sense would direct me on this. I think the complexity of something like that is so great. Where would the water go, and which way would the Earth tilt?
Yeah, but you're off on your safe island.
Yes.
In your sandwich islands. It seems to me an island would not be necessarily an ideal place to be in the middle of such an event.
Everybody says that, but I'm also on the slopes of an 11,000-foot volcano. So 11,000 feet is higher than 2,200 feet.
Right.
So the point is, that either be on a mountain you know, where you can get up it or be inland far enough so that you don't have to worry too much about the ocean coming that far inland. But I would say anywhere along the coast where you don't have access to very high ground and there's these kinds of circumstances is iffy at best.
So obviously coastlines.
I'm waiting to see the rules and regulations.
Not good. Now, I live on an island, but there's a couple of islands here in the Sandwich Islands that have very tall mountains. In fact, Mauna Loa is the largest mountain mass in the world, larger than the largest mountains in the Himalayas. And it's like 13,000 feet high. So
So you could end up on a little bump of land waving a flag.
Well, it wouldn't be that little, but it would be a smaller island.
Certainly would be smaller than it is now, right?
It would be a smaller island, potentially.
Yeah, and a lot of people would be, if they had any advance notice of this, running for the hill.
Yes, and we will have advance notice because, again, you know, when you have a large planetary body heading our way, you have a couple of weeks minimally, maybe a couple of months probably, to say, and to speculate about what this may or may not do.
Don't we have it? We've got a plan for this, right? I mean, we'd blow it up or shift it off course or... Why are you laughing?
Because there's no plan for something like this. This is science fiction stuff, Art. Unfortunately, well, so was the attack on the World Trade Center, as far as I'm concerned. Science fiction stuff.
Yeah, it's like there is no more science fiction, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if anything can surprise me anymore, but...
The plan is for a comet or a large asteroid. The idea is to blow it up. And to at least make the pieces, you know, come down in small pieces.
That's right.
Yeah, but not for planetary bodies.
So then we don't even have plan A for this thing.
No, sir. No plan A.
No. How catastrophic. Now that would be a big event in the timeline of events in the cosmos. How big a spike is it?
I think it is what the Bible and what Father Malachi Martin referred to as what produces the 3 days of darkness. Not only do we get the inundation and the flood. Now remember this thing.
He also said, "Watch the sky." Listen, hold on. We're at a break point. We'll pick up right here when we get back. I'm Art Bell with Major Ed Dames, Dr. Doom, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001. Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired December 10th, 2001.
Got a little bit of breaking news for you all. That's right, breaking news. Listen, you don't often get this kind of notification. We are in the middle of having one giant mother of an X-class player. It's happening right now, actually, right this minute. And the charts haven't even caught up with it. If you go to my website, this would be kind of interesting for you. If you go to artbell.com, go all the way down to the bottom where it says home. It says home. And, oh, now it's caught up. Now it says X-class player, finally. This just is happening as we speak. And you click on where it says X-class player. You can see the spike is still rising, and we're at about an X, about middle X range already. A middle X range already. That's a big, big flare. Believe me, it's kind of like the earthquake scale. You know, each bump it goes up. Once you get to X, is really a monster. And this one just came out of nowhere. I'd kind of like to see a picture of the sun, too. At any rate, if you want to see it, it's a kind of a rare opportunity to see it graphed as it's actually occurring. Artbell.com. And when you get there, just go all the way down to home on the left-hand side there. Click on it, or touch it, if you will, and follow the yellow brick road over to that graph. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. So we're having a mother of a flare on the sun right now. God, the sun has been absolutely berserk. In fact, I've got to ask Ed about that. So much territory to cover with Ed tonight, talking about Nibiru, or not necessarily, but something of that scale affecting all of Earth. In the meantime, our sun is really cooking us. I'm telling you, this is wild. And when the sun gets wild, the markets get wild, people get wild, everything gets wild, wars occur. All kinds of wild stuff happens when the sun goes berserk. And so far, as I can see, they have been wrong about this sun cycle. Boy, it does not seem like it's past the peak. In fact, it's just been wild up there. Absolutely wild. Really something to watch. We'll be right back. Well, here we go once again. We were talking about this major catastrophic event, and I got distracted for a second by what's going on the sun. It's not... God bless Fast Blast. People can just notify me, boom, when something is going on like that. Ed, we are having a wild, wild time with the sun, aren't we?
This is an interesting solar cycle. Hmm?
That's putting it mildly. Interesting solar cycle. You have had a very great deal, of course, to say about the sun in the past.
I have. Scientists do not, as professional and remote viewers, we know that there is a much greater link between the sun's activity and the Earth's weather than meteorologists have ever suspected, or are just now beginning to suspect.
Well, the sun's effect on our ionosphere, on our magnetic field, on just all kinds of things, Ed. On us.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it actually accelerates ozone depletion when you have this much activity. There's a study that I led for Lawrence Rockefeller years ago. I mentioned it on this program, that looked at the consequences of ozone depletion and a projection of what would happen. And it looks like it's going to go all the way. We're going to lose our ozone layer eventually. So I call these kinds of things OBE squared, overcome by, not out-of-body experience, but overcome by events squared, because it's like not just a confluence of events, but a quantum leap, one right after another.
I don't suppose that you would like to comment on whether anything is being done to try and mitigate the ozone loss.
Yes, there is. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you how it works from my perspective. If and this gets a little bit esoteric, so bear with me.
Okay.
If you think of the Earth and as Harold Bloom and others have thought of it for centuries and millennia and of time as Gaia, as a living thing. Each of us, each living thing on its surface, each tree, each human, each dog and cat, is like a corpuscle, a red corpuscle in your own body. If you are a red corpuscle in your body, you know, swimming around in your veins and arteries, and you think, you're arrogant enough to think that yeah, you're the world, and there's all of these billions of other cells around you or other individuals, you might never become cognizant that you're part of this organism that's walking around upright, ever become cognizant of that.
It's true.
And that's how we are in terms of Earth. Earth continues. We as bodies do not. We die just like the red corpuscles in our body die and are replenished. Earth is an organism that's much bigger than us, and it is intimately connected with the sun, intimately connected with the sun. So
I
when it's in trouble,
yeah, we are.
When it needs help, think, just bear with me for a moment, and if Earth needed help from its mother, the sun, and it was able in some way that we could never understand, communicate the idea that it's hurting, and that the parent star could assist it in some way. You get the gist here?
I get the gist, yes.
We are so puny, Art. We're just a ephemeral, transient spike in time, but Earth is not. And our bodies, not our souls, but in terms of our bodies, we are. We're just a little flash in the pan. Earth is not. And our star is very much in connection with this Earth, this gem of a world floating around in space.
Well, watching what's going on is, to me, absolutely remarkable. Listen, I know that you wanted to revisit the topic of the mark of the beast, and that's of intense interest to so many people out there, Ed. This mark of the beast thing, what do you want to tell us about that?
Let me back up to the idea of Nibiru for a moment. And this
sure.
is the Sitchin idea of of the 10th planet.
Sure.
The planet of the crossing, all the different names, Marduk, that have been given to this visitor periodically, about once every 3,600 years, revisits our solar system. And depending on how close it passes, and don't forget, it gets two cracks at us, one inbound and one outbound.
Outbound, right.
Yeah. So depending on the situation of Earth at any given time or any of the other planets, that gravitational attraction or pull or a synergy between that passing space body and other planets like Jupiter can affect this wobble on Earth. So it's an interesting perspective because it looks like that's why the Mayan calendar ends at around 2012.
Mm-hmm.
It's real close to the end of this tulpa, this end of this era. So you want me to revisit the idea of Mark of the Beast?
I do.
Mark of the Beast was an interesting remote viewing topic. All of the topics in Revelation and in the Bible and in the in many of the older, not necessarily apocalyptic texts, but the prophets of old, the true prophets, who didn't volunteer to be prophets, you know, they were called upon
mm-hmm.
to be prophets, and they wrote what they were given. And this idea of the mark of the beast, we remote viewed that years ago, and actually I spent a lot of time on it myself. And I stand by what the results are. Anybody who's trained in even some of the intermediate remote viewing skills that we teach can be taught to discern the same data, the same results. And that is an AIDS vaccine. The mark of the beast turns out to be an AIDS vaccine. Somebody 2,500 years ago was looking 2,500 years in the future, and that particular idea is what the only way that they can conceptualize it 2,500 years ago was to call it the mark of the beast.
Huh. Well, But I guess I don't understand. If it's an AIDS vaccine, why would it even conceptually be thought of as the mark of the beast? An AIDS vaccine would be a good thing, right?
I don't want to get into it because it's such a controversial thing, Art. It deals
with... Are you saying it's going to be an AIDS vaccine gone wrong? Is that where you're going?
That I can talk about. I can't talk about what's behind the idea of the mark of the beast. Not on the air. It's too controversial. But, yes, what happens is that the people who accept the mark of the beast break out in woesome sores. That's what Revelation says. They break out in woe be the mother who gives suck to her child if she takes the mark of the beast, because the child will die. Essentially, it's an AIDS vaccine that is not proven, and it is, and it does result in causing injury to people to take it.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm afraid that we are heading toward a real possibility of nations forcing this, not forcing it in terms of holding you down and shooting you up with it, but if you do not have a mark on your ID card or your driver's license saying that you've had this inoculation, you're not going to be able to get a job, or you're not going to be able to go to certain places or get a passport.
So it would almost be like the opposite of the Scarlet Letter. In other words, you'd have to have this mark, or... Oh, my.
That's a good analogy. Yes. Yes. Huh. Or you'd be ostracized, excommunicated. You won't be able to conduct commerce of any type. You won't be able to get a job in a big corporation.
You definitely won't be able to date.
Unless you date someone who is not...
That's right.
Who doesn't have that mark.
One of the unmarked, right?
Yes.
So
with the vaccine, it goes wrong, and that's what the prophets of old were saying, is that many people are forced to accept the mark of the beast, but woe be them, those the people that do that, because they break out in woes and sores. The vaccine goes wrong. It's not proven.
Well, vaccines have been known to go wrong, indeed, and they keep we keep getting news blurbs and flashes about a possible AIDS vaccine, and the story is big for a day or two, and then it goes away, and you never hear about it again. I bet I've heard 50 of those, Ed, since we've been aware of AIDS. You know, we've got one, or we've just about got one, and the story always goes away.
Well, the pandemic is so huge that it's very attractive in a number of different ways to come up with to research a vaccine. And you can imagine how much money is involved for those companies that say they have an effective vaccine.
Oh, of course. I don't know how you would prove that until a decade or more has gone by, knowing, you know, how AIDS works. But, yeah, it would be big money, all right. And one can imagine something going wrong, no question. Ed, do you use remote viewing for personal guidance?
Yes.
Do you use it for personal gain?
No. Let me think about that for a moment. just give me a second here. I think yes. I have to. I'd be a liar if I did not say I haven't used it at least once. On the Mind Dazzle kit that I market.
Yeah, we're about to talk about that.
I have used it to look at the success of that. So I guess I have used it for a personal
experience. Oh, so in other words, ahead of time, you remote viewed the concept of the Mind Dazzle kit, trying to decide if it was worth doing as a project.
No, not the concept. I knew it was worth doing. It was an amazing thing, but I wanted to see if it was economically successful. And so I did remote
view. That qualifies as personal gain.
Yeah, I kind of hate to talk about it. Because
no, that's okay. No, that's all right, because that's one of the possible uses of a remote viewing, period. And Mindazzle is your product, and you absolutely have every right, if not an obligation, to plug it while you're on the show. Mindazzle, I've got Mindazzle, and it's really cool. It is exceptionally, like everything you've done, exceptionally professionally produced, really well done. Mindazzle is a kind of a remote viewing kit, and it's got How many sealed envelopes?
It's got, let's see, 180 sealed envelopes. It's actually endorsed by Russell Targ.
Yep.
You've had it on your show, Renowned, doing research.
Renowned, yes, indeed.
Loves it. Everybody loves it. I designed it to be elegantly simple to do. It's high quality. It's inexpensive. It's super fun and effective. It's a wonderful hobby. And
it can be a good party item, really. 180 sealed envelopes with these targets. And you, of course, can begin testing your remote viewing skills or, I don't know, even just playing with it. You can look at it that way. By taking these sealed envelopes with these specific targets, doing as instructed, and trying to see how well you do. You're right. It's an elegant idea, concept. It's really kind of a cool concept. And Mind Dazzle won't empty your wallet. How much is it?
It's $89.95, Art.
$89.95. And the way to get Mind Dazzle.
You can order it toll-free in the U.S. and Canada by calling a couple of numbers, or you can order it on the Internet.
What kind of feedback have you had on Mind Dazzle?
Nothing but people, it blows their socks off, because at 5 minutes out of the box, they're doing what is supposed to be impossible. So it's an end run around all the parapsychology laboratories. It's actually becoming a new standard for parapsychology laboratories to use, because all the cards are standardized and the procedures are so simple. It's like Bill Murray and Ghostbusters, you know, with the Zener cards.
Mm-hmm.
Only this one is far more fun to use. And by the way, there's a national talent search that ends December 31st, end of this month, and the winner gets full tuition paid for TRV 101.
Oh, my.
That's a $2,350 tuition at Technical Remote Viewing Institute on the Remote Viewing Campus in Los Angeles.
That's
actually,
in other words, what you're, the contest then is for actually coming to the school.
That's right. And they are my student for a week. And it's a very valuable thing. And also, I have to mention on your program, my institute will no longer be offering courses to the public after July 31st of 2002.
Wow,
we're
really?
We're going to do the hired gun work corporate contracts again. And I will only be teaching in-house my own teams.
So back to the really private stuff, huh?
Yeah, it's been 18 years, and I'm going back to the private sector.
All right. I'd like to get the phone open for the next hour a little bit, Ed, and I want to talk to you about the collective consciousness a little bit, too, so stay right there. I'm Art Bell. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM, roaring through the nighttime.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
I'm just beginning to see. Now I'm on my way. It doesn't matter to me. Chasing the clouds away. Something calls to me. The trees are drawing me near. I'm
Mark Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
Good morning, everybody. Major Ed Daines is here, and we are shortly going to the telephones. A little bit of business to take care of, but then it's to the phones, and you with Major Daines. Once again, here is Major Ed Daines. And Major Daines, just before we go to the phones, I want to talk for just a second about the collective consciousness. I know that you're very well aware of the experiments that I ran over the years with the weather and healing and that sort of thing. And recently, we had occasion to observe two things. One, the Princeton graph that was given out, which showed what happened hours prior to the September 11th event, then the gigantic spike during it, and then hours after, which was amazing to me. And then I tried one more experiment, and Dean Radin provided a graph, which just was absolutely astounding, showing this giant, sudden non-randomness, and all of that just sort of, I'm going to be honest with you, Ed, it freaked me out. It has something to do with the collective consciousness. I don't know what. Do you?
Not particularly, but we could. I think that we could. We could use expert remote viewing to look at that one of those specific events and then attempt to model the mechanics and the dynamics associated with the event. That's one of the things I love to do in my work. We've learned a lot by doing that, looking at psychokinesis, for instance, that we've learned that a thing, let's say yourself,
yes,
you're really not a thing, you're a process. You're in a state of change constantly, and by looking at yourself as a process that's undergoing state changes, it's easier to grasp the idea of how psychokinesis works. It works on this process rather than a thing. Because if you look at a thing, the idea is that the thing is fixed in time. And that's not true. You're a process. You're growing and dying and constantly changing.
Yeah.
A glass of water, for instance, the water evaporates. The glass itself is a thing. And over time, it disintegrates. So it's it's more of a process. And we learned that. So we could model that. I deal with the collective unconscious art.
All right, I understand. Yeah. But if I could challenge you, you can find the graphs if you need them, if they're a good focal point, on my website.
Use them as a target reference, pointer to...
Exactly.
Yes.
I would sure love you to take a look at that, Ed.
Okay. I'll take a look at it and see. In this case, it's more difficult than it would be a one-on-one type of psychokinesis or telekinesis experiment because we're dealing with so many people. And I don't want to get into the complexities right now, but yes, I'll explore that.
All right.
In my work, what we call the matrix or the collective unconscious,
yes,
that we view in our model as the sum of all of mankind's ideas and knowledge, along with the information about all things through all space and time existing in a collective information field. So in essence, the way that remote viewing works, we think that there's only one global mind field, the matrix, the collective unconscious. We're all immersed in this field. Our brains are. And our brains act as oscillators. And it allows us to tune in by turning our unconscious attention to the target signal and decode these patterns.
Right.
The process is very analogous to a radio receiver tuned to a station that's broadcasting on a specific frequency in the electromagnetic field. The patterns of information are specific. However, in the case of remote viewing, this transmission is instantaneous through both space and time. So there is no, the time drops out of the equation. Mind is outside of space and time. That's information.
All right. Well, it just seems like in some ways, you know, the way you describe or the way I've heard people describe the collective consciousness, it isn't all that different in its collectiveness than the collective unconscious. I mean, it seems to have a lot of the same characteristics.
Yes, it actually feeds the unconscious. It feeds the collective consciousness right now on our planet is chaos. it's pure chaos. And that chaos feeds the collective unconscious in a certain way. And that pops up and percolates up in dreams. In fact, the only way that you can really access the unconscious is through disciplined remote viewing or flashes that natural psychics have. But the collective consciousness is chaos. It's fed by our ideas and our paradigms and those kinds of things. And there's a buffer, a liminal gate that acts as a gatekeeper between the unconscious and conscious awareness.
A gatekeeper. All right, listen, I promised. Here come the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello, Art. Thank you very much. My name is Murray, and I'm calling from Columbus, Ohio. I have a quick confirmation, comment, and question for the Major. The confirmation is regarding the 3 days of darkness. I'm a born-again Catholic Christian, and I study very carefully and follow devoutly the apparitions of the Blessed Mother, especially the one in Illyria, which incidentally is the annual date of that is tonight, December 11th at midnight. And there's an apparition going on there, but she has spoken often of the 3 days of darkness and has said that the earth would shift course, is what she's saying, and that the seasons would actually be reversed. Summer would become winter in the northern hemisphere and vice versa.
That would be scientifically accurate. In other words, if the earth, about the only way you'd get that is exactly if that occurred, the earth tilted.
Right, and there's another visionary who claimed to have a vision of an object like the Major has explained coming near the earth and pulling the earth off its course. So that's just a quick confirmation. And the comment for your listeners' benefit, though it is controversial about the gentleman's interpretation of the Mark of the Beast, would be because from a biblical perspective, the book of Revelation speaks of licentiousness, which is sexual sin, which is any sex from a biblical perspective that is outside of a heterosexual monogamous marriage. Therefore, anyone not involved in such sex would have no need of a vaccine for AIDS because they would be protected under God's law. And I can see that, though I disagree with that. I think that I can't agree or disagree, but I believe it has more to do with abortion than an AIDS vaccine, but we'll pray about that. But the question I have mainly for the Major is if he dares to remote view the effect globally of abortion on the Earth and the imminent things that he sees, especially in Korea and with the 3 days of darkness.
All right, sir. Let's hold it there. That's a very direct question. There is a sharp, incredible, just raucous debate in America and has been as long as I've been alive about abortion, no matter what the Supreme Court's current holding is. Have you ever considered viewing abortion and its effect, Ed?
Well, I don't know how I would set that problem up. I could just throw it out there as a topic, what we call a topical search, you know, and look at the effects and see if I could interpret those. But no, I've never done that. And I do not want to get into the genesis of our analysis on the AIDS vaccine because it is very controversial. And I received more hate mail from discussing this in the past than I've ever done before, and I'm not in the mood to do that anymore, at least then, not during the Christmas season. But the 3 days of darkness, you have to realize that, you know, what is the actual physical cause of that? Well, if the earth shifts, to whatever degree, the winds will pick up. The coefficient of friction between the Earth's atmosphere and the mantle, you know, is loose.
Oh, lots of wind.
And there's a time delay. You know, you spin an uncooked egg, and a raw egg, and it doesn't do anything for a moment, and then the albumin and the yolk catches up with the shell, and the egg starts to spin.
That's right.
Well, the Earth does, and that's analogous, the shell to the Earth, to the wind, to the atmosphere, and the albumin and the egg yolk to the Earth's core and to the mantle. When that momentum, that energy catches up to the atmosphere, the winds pick up. So when the winds hit 300 miles an hour for a week or so, that's when you get the 3 days of darkness, because at least three of those days are going to be pitch black because of the debris and dirt and dust in the air from those high winds. That's what the darkness is from us.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, Eric. This is John from Goodland, Minnesota.
Hi, John.
Ed, I'm a big fan of yours, first I want to say, because I've spent a year of my life digging a root cellar, prepare for the future. And I agree, I think we're heading in the long term towards an ice age and an ozone depletion situation with maybe a little wiggle room for individuals or maybe us collectively. But David Cerrato the other night sparked a question by mentioning that these large ice balls he's seen coming to the Earth, which can only be seen by infrared light, making ozone when they disintegrate. And he had a conjecture that maybe the ETs were trying to heal the ozone layer. But be that as it may, my question really is, do you allow any free agency for, say, archangels or extra-dimensionals or, say, God to pull us back from the brink at the last minute like a parent would to a child?
Hmm.
I do allow for that, but also see through history how important responsibility for actions are. I mean, where was God during the bombing of Dresden or Hiroshima or Nagasaki? Nobody pulled us back. So I'll be the first one to tell you I am a firm, absolute believer in angels, including guardian angels. But I think that they have a prime directive, and I don't think it involves pulling us back without getting because then we wouldn't recognize the results or consequences of our actions. That's my belief.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care. Angels have always been of great particular interest to me, Ed, and sometime I'd love to have you go into the whole subject more deeply.
It's one of my favorite subjects.
I'd love to understand.
I don't make any money off of it. That's why I don't spend a lot of time with it. You know, to be crass here, but it's my favorite subject, but everybody has their favorite subjects, and yours and mine are, you know, we love UFOs, but it's difficult for me as a professional remote viewer to get involved in something I like so much, although I've had some very sexy contracts in dealing with UFOs. But I leave it as an avocation, and because there isn't any money in angels.
No money in angels. All right. I'm sure you'll be quoted there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and RFL. Good morning.
And I'm getting my Christmas gift right now because I'm talking to my favorite talk show host and my favorite guest of all times. Hello, Ed. Aloha. It's Kathy from Woodbridge, New Jersey.
Woodbridge?
Woodbridge, New Jersey.
Oh, I Woodbridge. Okay, I was born in Hackensack.
Wow. Poor soul. You're in New Jersey. You're like me, so you know the air.
Mm.
It isn't any better up here, Ed.
I didn't think so.
No. I don't breathe deeply anymore.
Well, the trade winds are nice here.
Yeah, I can imagine. Listen, Ed, there was something we were all abuzz on before 9/11. And it was a wonderful crop circle or crop glitch. One, it looked like it was the message, Arecibo message.
Oh, the Arecibo message?
And it was a face.
And a face?
And we were talking like crazy about this, and then the 9/11 thing happened, and naturally we forgot about it.
And it stopped everything.
It stopped everything. And if you could just relate to that, you could tell Amart about it, more of it. And when you get a chance, have you remote viewed the Airbus Flight 587?
All right, Kathy, thank you. Airbus 587, how about that first?
I have not looked at 587. It would be a very easy one to do, Art. Those kinds of problems, what caused an airline crash or something, an accident like that, are elementary problems for remote viewers, elementary. But I have not spent any time on it.
Why are they so easy?
Well, because you're looking at the cause of the crash, and it's either an explosion that originated on board the aircraft, and then it's either a bomb or a part that broke. It could be something that's coming from the outside of the aircraft, and that means it's coming up or across or down, and then you could look at what that was, a meteorite, a missile, or a bullet. You could look at it, or you're dealing with people fighting in a cabin, a la Egypt Air Flight 990, or you're dealing with an explosion that's a bomb in a cargo pit or something else
like
that.
But it's some kind of very specific incident.
And you go right to it.
All right.
It's just a piece of cake. The Arecibo glyph, I have not looked at. Crop circles, we've spent an extraordinary amount of time on as professional remote viewers over the years, fascinating beyond belief. We can see the technology that makes them, but we can't understand what they are. We can't grasp their meanings. They appear to be, at least with regard to myself, it's beyond my ken. And you know what? That's okay, because who wants to know everything? If all the mysteries were unknown.
So there are a few things that even remote viewing cannot grasp.
It may just be me. I mean, I'm a simple man and may not be able to understand these things. And two things I have not, for the life of me, I've worked my tail off on both cattle mutilations and crop circles, and I can't understand either one.
Well, then you're right there with the rest of us for a change. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good evening, Ed. Good evening, Art.
Hi.
I had listened to you, Ed, in some shows in the past, and you had talked about a block in time where, I think it was 2012, I'm not sure, where none of your readers could read past that.
Yep.
And I was wondering if anything in that area has changed.
I believe Ed called it a discontinuity.
Discontinuity.
That was the term I termed, the discontinuity.
Mm-hmm.
It's in terms of catastrophe theory, if you're familiar with catastrophe theory, it's a break in the continuity of the curve, where things go to infinity immediately and suddenly. And
so
no
that
time
more
long.
Of our infinite minds, we couldn't grasp it, so we're not even able to see it?
And that, well, let's ask it this way. The discontinuity remains in place?
I think what the discontinuity means to me at this juncture is that I have hit the block in my mind is a level of confusion that I can't get beyond. It may mean something physical, but I am telling you right now, it is so confusing. There's so much happening at once.
Or it could be spiritual.
It could be any number of things, Art. Number of things. I just can't. I can't get past that wall and see what's happening.
Caller?
Have you reviewed the caves in Illinois at all?
Wow.
Is this the Kimball, Glenn Kimball?
Yes.
No, Glenn asked me to do that for him, but we were just caught up in these, unfortunately.
Oh, he asked you?
Yes, he emailed me very nicely. I don't know Glenn that well, but a very nice request to do that, and unfortunately. That's the fun stuff about remote viewing. That's all the neat stuff, but we had other pressing problems at the time. We weren't able to do it.
All right. So there's the caller's answer. No, not yet. How do you decide, Ed, the priority of your work?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer, but I can give you some insight.
Okay.
Let's look at, let's say, Osama bin Laden.
All right.
Okay. Now I passed some information to U.S. Special Operations Command about where the attack was planned, because we wanted to know who hurt us. Okay. But the reason we're not continuing that project and locating Osama bin Laden, one of the primary reasons is because, generally speaking, many of my team members have become pacifists over the year. I know this is going to sound strange to you. I mean, I'm a soldier and all of that, but we become pacifists because there's some responsibilities that we have, yes, but when the responsibilities produce data that is going to be used for targeting purposes, and when the bombs are dropped on civilians...
You can stop right there. I understand. All right. Hold on. We're at a break point, bottom of the hour. We'll continue with this. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. And every now and then you just sort of get in a Layla mood. I really like this thing. Just sort of laid back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
You've been wrong. I don't know what you know. You know it's just your foolish plan.
Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from December 10th, 2001.
Tomorrow night, by the way, the best Bigfoot researcher I know, Robert W. Morgan, is going to be my guest. And it's going to be very interesting. I may have a special little surprise or two in tomorrow night's program. But Robert W. Morgan on Bigfoot tomorrow night. You don't want to miss that. All right. When I asked about priorities, I think here's what I meant. Any one person or even a group of people only have so much time, and there are big national priorities like where's the bad guy that crashed the airplanes into the towers and the Pentagon. There are important worldwide questions like the one Ed has been dealing with tonight or the one about Korea. They, too, may not be at all really profitable, frankly, when you think about it. And there are personal questions about a person's own product. And there are, there's projects that Art Bell comes up with. There's all kinds of things and people, I'm sure, that want you to do things, Ed. And so I was just curious, you know, what process you use to sort of triage everything that awaits.
Uh-huh. I take them on a case-by-case basis, Art.
Hmm. All right.
There's one in particular that I'm very fond of, and it is my favorite one. But it's going to be a while before we can really devote a lot of time to it. And it involves contact, like the idea of contact in the movie,
yes,
where there is a standard beacon that you can build, and you can use the collective unconscious to go in and download the plans for this particular communications device. It's not a transportation device like in the movie, but it is a communication device. That's my favorite project.
That's a good one, all right.
It's also the one of Aaron Donahue, one of my teachers. He and I are working on that together in our spare time.
Boy, Ed, I sure would be interested in a follow-up.
Oh, it's fascinating, because it deals nothing with radio telescopes and SETI or even OSETI.
I don't care. If it involves contact, I'm interested.
Oh, yeah. It's the reason we're not hearing anything. The universe is teeming with not only life but intelligent life, but they're using standards that are different than the electromagnetic energy.
All right. That's a good teaser. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed.
First-time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
You're not allowed to use your last name.
Oh, I'm not. I'm
so
sorry.
You made me bleep that out.
Oh.
I'm sorry I had to bleep that out. Just your first name, please.
Name is Ariel.
Ariel. Excellent.
From Illinois.
Okay.
Well, first I want to mention that I did buy the Mind Dazzle kit.
Oh.
And yes, and I'm having great success, and I thank you, Ed, so much.
Oh, pleasure's mine.
It's mine.
I have fun with it too, but I have too much fun with it.
Well, it's a fantastic product, you know, and the suggested reading was also fantastic. So.
Oh, thank you.
I also wanted to mention that I may be getting some training from one of your teachers, actually the one that you just mentioned. And my ultimate goal is to be in the Matrix Intelligence Agency. So July or no July, you know, I'm going to do what I can. So this is a landmark day for me, actually.
Okay. Well, we grandfather our advanced students, so that cutoff doesn't apply to our advanced students.
Okay. Well, anyways, my question is, I was curious about the Book of Revelations, if you had a chance to remote view the two prophets that warn against the Mark of the Beast.
Ah.
No, we haven't. We've been asked to. In fact, the person that asked me was Robert Knight, and Robert Knight was the one that introduced me to Art Bell 5.5 years ago. Actually, 6 years ago, he started asking me to do Art show.
No kidding.
Yeah, I said no, and he took him 6 months to convince me to do your show.
Huh.
October 5.5 years ago, but Robert has asked me to remote view those two individuals, and we haven't. We've remote viewed the Antichrist, however, which was fascinating to us, and I've talked about that in earlier shows.
Yes, it was also very fascinating.
I'm sorry, the false prophet was very fascinating.
which was the television.
The false prophet was not a machine. It turned out to be something without a soul, and we were assuming it was human, and it turns out to be the thing that convinces everybody to follow the Antichrist.
Television.
It's television. So, I mean, how would you, 2,500 years ago, describe television? In terms of that 2,500 years ago, it would be very difficult. It would be like a, you know, Neanderthal attempting to describe a Cadillac when he couldn't even conceive of a screw.
Yeah,
it's
really funny. When you first said that, I thought, oh, man. But then the more I thought about it, it started to make sense, Ed.
Well, that's what you get. I mean, you take what you get in our business, and that's what the Matrix has for us. But I'm sorry, Ariel, I interrupted you.
All right,
no,
caller.
Thank you.
Caller, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Cheerio.
Cheerio. Cheers.
Yes.
Major Dames, Art, how do you do? It's Missing Learjet Tim from Cool Lake, Alberta, Canada. Call.
Yes.
He's still around.
Yes. Still around.
Yeah, not like some of Art's callers in the last 7 years. They seem to disappear or get have accidents.
This is an old-timer.
Yeah.
Well, look... you know, like the song says, 40,000 men and women every day. What's up?
You know, what's up?
Yeah.
What's up? Last year when you took your predictions,
yes.
I think number 42
right.
is where I played. And what's up?
What was your
space
prediction?
Station?
It was yours, right?
Yeah, Space Station.
The International Space Station.
Yeah.
And what did you predict? Remind me.
It was just some type of catastrophic event.
On the International Space Station.
And you know what?
What?
I just feel like we're right on the doorstep.
Right on the door. Well,
yeah.
We would have to be since the year's about to close out, eh?
Well, besides that, but I mean like right now. I'm talking like maybe within the next 24 hours or something.
Well, gee, there was just this big sun flare. Okay, well... He's saying he believes something is going to occur, Ed, with the international is catastrophic with the International Space Station, and obviously I would doubt that you have done any specific targeting work on that, or have you?
No, I have not, but I do remember one remote viewing session in the old days when the CIA took over the remnants of the military program,
right.
I hired all the Army remote viewers, all the best and the brightest in the program. I hired them. And one of those viewers, Mel Riley, way back when, did a session that did show, for all intents and purposes, what looked like a space station plummeting to Earth. And I'll never forget that session. We didn't do anything else with it, but there was that one session.
Wow. Well, you never know. That's not a high confidence prediction by any means. But there.
But
you
it
go.
Was an interesting session by a very skilled viewer.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
This is Ann. I'm from New York City.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask Major Dames if any of the things that I'm, dots that I'm putting together make sense to him.
Okay.
Okay. Well, North Korea is one thing, but everybody on all the stations are interviewing all Middle East countries constantly, and it all comes back to the same thing. It's all about Israel, and like blame Israel. And also, what's happening? The UN has the human rights has in Switzerland. They're bringing up questioning. Israel's human rights. Now, also what's been happening, there's been four ships that are coming from the Middle East. They say 300 or 400 people are on them. And they go from Afghanistan and then Iraq and then Indonesians. They lost all the people. They go to Australia, and Australia just won't take in 300 people. So they're pressuring them. They keep on bringing hundreds and hundreds of people. They put them on an island nearby, and I think they're having the UN trying to, you know, see if they're worthy or whatever. But there could be the...
I'm trying to grasp... Hey,
can we cut to the chase?
Yeah, where...
Oh, it concerns... The UN is now questioning Australia for human rights.
All right. Well, you just said they were questioning Israel. I have no idea, Ed, where all that was coming from or what she was all about there. I'm sorry. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Art. I got a couple of related questions for Ed. I want to know when he remote viewed the Antichrist, who or what he saw, and I also want to know what his take on the prophecies of Nostradamus related to the third Antichrist, if there is such a person.
I haven't remote viewed the quatrains dealing with the third Antichrist, so I don't know anything about that. But the Antichrist in general appears to be not necessarily a single person, although in the end it is one man, but it's the idea of a sort of a field effect. It's in everybody, and it's like everyone has a dark and a light side, a shadow part of them.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anyone, but in fact, when you do remote view it, you end up describing at least one or two babies who are born into horrid conditions on the planet contemporarily, and that's what you get. That's what I got, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So these are children that it could be any one of a number of children that are born under horrible circumstances, and you get things like a child thrown in a dumpster, literally thrown in a garbage dump, a child born in Bosnia to a mother who has just been shot, and a soldier removing the fetus from the mother. Those kinds of things are what you get when you remote view the Antichrist.
Well, I remember the interview where you said that you saw these things, but you also said that you didn't know who he was, or he was not who he was, not who he had become at that point, or something. Because I read some other.
The person that ends up being the Antichrist does not know that he is the Antichrist.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I always assumed that, you know, based upon my social conditioning, that was not the case, that the person would know and be connected,
mm-hmm.
you know,
like
tied at the hip with Satan, Mephistopheles, and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the person does not know.
Words, sir, let us all check our hairlines closely.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Art.
All right. Good. Yep, you're very welcome. Take care. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Art, this is Lee in Springfield, Illinois.
Hi, Lee.
Mr. Dames, first of all, thank you for your service to our country now and previously. I was wondering if you see us eventually going after Saddam Hussein, or if you've done anything in that area.
I haven't, but I've noticed one thing, and that is this idea of destiny appears to be a real thing. And Saddam Hussein should have been dead years ago. Everything mitigated against him being alive, and yet he's there. And So I think that there's something to this idea of destiny, that he's got a role to play. It's just a guess on my part. There's no logic behind it. But if that's the case, then if you look at biblical prophecy, then you can see where he fits in.
Okay.
Could I ask one more question?
Yes, go ahead.
This is a little test to the faith of the Christians in our audience tonight. Would they view Saddam Hussein as a person who could possibly repent and ask forgiveness?
That's an interesting. You want to deal with that, Ed?
Yeah, I'll deal with it tangentially. And in this manner, once I gave a session to someone, and the session, and just as an experiment, and it was something like it was God's most. I know what it was. It was God's infinite love. As a blind session to a student,
mm-hmm.
to an advanced student,
mm-hmm.
and the result of that session. Instead of, you know, I was thinking of some New Age type of thing,
yes.
You know, airy-fairy or whatever, beautiful place and all that. The result astounded me. It was a sketch of a prisoner on death row.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being that that love extends all the way to that type of a person. So I think that that kind of answers the question.
It does. Well, you said something earlier that really sort of piqued my interest, and I meant to follow up on. You said so many of the people that you've hired and that you've dealt with who were remote viewers become pacifists.
That's the experts are becoming pacifists.
Why?
Because they're beginning to look at themselves. One of the things that you can do as a professional remote viewer is when you remote view yourself, you're looking at how the collective looks at you.
Right.
You're not going anywhere. You're looking at how the collective perceives you. And that is some real insight, and mostly it's insight that you do not want to see about yourself.
I'm sure it is, yes.
I mean, ego reels at what you see. And you start to become responsible for a lot of, you realize that the wallet you're carrying around in your pocket that's made out of leather has associated with it a violent killing of an animal, and the Matrix sees that. The collective unconscious points to that and says, look, this animal died a horrible death, and those kinds of things. And you say, well, it's just a wallet, it's just a piece of skin. These are the kinds of things that pop out when you remote view, and you can ignore them. But you can only ignore them for a certain number of years before they start to surround you with these kinds of trespasses.
I'm with you. I understand perfectly, and I can also understand that that must have been an infinite source of aggravation to the government when the program was in the government for 20 years.
Not necessarily then, because we were still around soldiers, and we were still part of the military machine, and we could still hold on to that and pretend, you know.
Really?
Yeah, without that paradigm. But once you're on your own and you're an expert and you're working alone, then it starts to surround you, and you no longer have that gun to hold on to or that uniform, and you start to realize, whoa, you know. Maybe what some of the masters in history have been saying might be true about these kinds of things that we call New Age. And for a soldier, that's not very comfortable.
Yeah, you know, I think probably most of us inside at some level know it's true. It's just that we have this world we live in that's violent and real, and we have to deal with it. But yeah, I think most of us know deep inside that that's absolutely true. We might have time for one quick question. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to thank Major Danes for keeping us appraised of the target.
Do the wild thing at 775-727-1295.
I'm sure for many others, listeners.
Well, as you know, it was diverted from that.
Thank God. And thank Major Danes.
Thank God is right.
And do you foresee any immediate other targets for the terrorists before the end of the year or early?
All right, well, he's sort of already answered that, sir.
This cell is laying low, but I don't know what they're going to do. And it is an Al-Qaeda cell. They are highly trained, and they are, you know, they're... I just think that they're...
Could you remote view whether they've been cut off from instruction, Ed?
They have been.
They have been?
Yes, they have been. So they're on their own. In fact, we speculate that they were actually going to hijack another plane and crash it into the dome of a particular reactor, but that it was their own plan now that they didn't have a plane to approach it, the reactor from the sea. And that is why I warned both the security guard, the FBI, and the sheriff's department in that particular place to watch this.
Listen, my friend, we've done another program. Thank you, as always, Ed. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
We'll do it again.
Okay, all right.
Take care, my friend.
Good night.
Good night. And from the high deserts, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta. Some bill.